ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Kirk Herbstreit and Matt Barry.
It is another edition of the ESPN College Football Podcast. Typically, it's Herbie and Maddie on a Monday. We slid the schedule a little bit to take you a little bit closer to the national championship game between Georgia and Alabama. We'll get into all of that in just a little bit. But Herbie, good morning. You've come down from that, I don't know, what was it, 36 hours of just gauntlet travel. Yeah. Good to talk ball with you again.
Yeah, man, it was great. My dogs just got back. I haven't seen them in a couple of weeks. But yeah, it was a fun, crazy trip from Miami over to LA for the Rose Bowl and a couple college 3-hour college game days. Call the Orange Bowl, call the Rose Bowl. The Orange Bowl didn't quite live up to what we all had hoped for. Georgia's just too good that night. Michigan had a great season, but they're just overwhelmed, I think, from the word go in that game. Give Georgia all the credit. Now we have a Georgia-Alabama rematch in the national championship. And then the Rose Bowl was phenomenal, you know. And I was telling my kids, because they've been to the Rose Bowl every year since they were about 4, I said, guys, that game was amazing. Imagine if that was at SoFi or if that was at Jerry's World, it would not have been the same game. You know, there's something about that setting that just makes it different, makes it unique. And it's more historic, you know, what C.J. Stroud did, what Jackson Smith and Jigba did, and the way Ohio State fought back. I mean, after everything they had been through, after losing to Michigan and the opt-outs, and are they really interested in playing? Do they really care? And then they're down 14. I mean, if there's ever a time to be like, all right, I'm out of here. And not to mention the team they're playing,
right,
is playing a Super Bowl, like in their minds. This is their first ever Rose Bowl. They're up 14. They're on top of Ohio State with their foot on their neck. And Ohio State with these young receivers and led by, of course, Stroud and Smith and Jigba. And then the defense in the second half, getting off the field and giving them a chance. I've done a lot of those. This is my 14th that I've called. And that one is as good and as compelling as any of them I've ever called. So that game obviously lived up to it. So yeah, a lot of fun, man. And now we turn the page to Indy and get ready for the national championship.
And I'd imagine it's not going to be a stretch of the imagination to think that Alabama, Georgia is going to be much more competitive in the semifinals, because both of those teams are clicking on all cylinders. You mentioned the Rose Bowl. You mentioned the opt-outs. Jackson Smith and Jigba takes advantage. No Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave. But going into that game, Kirk, you guys had the 3-hour game day at the Rose Bowl that morning. You had talked about the opt-outs with Desmond Howard. You had made a comment on College Game Day about whether or not kids nowadays, players nowadays in the era of NIL, transfer portal, and opt-outs, whether they actually put on their helmets for the love of the sport and not just themselves. Those comments went all over the internet. Twitter went nuts. So this is really the first time you've had an opportunity to talk about those. I'm just curious your thoughts now after the first few days of after what you said.
Well, I think my first thought is that was an 8-minute conversation. I wonder how many people who had a comment or a headline or one quote watched the entire 8-minute conversation between the four of us. There was a lot of things said during those 8 minutes. The one thing that I said that seemed to capture the headlines for people's own agenda, and that's all they went with, was players don't love college football the way they used to. Maurice came back at me and said, now that's a sweeping comment. Do you mean, are you saying all players? And I said, no, I'm not saying all players. I'm saying some players, that's their lens. I said, I covered this sport in the front row for 26 years. I have 4 sons that are 21 years old and younger. I've watched how they've grown up. I've watched how their friends have grown up. I don't know if there's anyone more plugged into this generation than me. 2 of my 4 boys play Power 5 football. So again, maybe there's somebody that's more plugged in or more can relate more to 21 and younger. I'd love to meet them compared to what I've done for the last 26 years. So I'm not out of touch by any stretch of the imagination. I think if anything, I'd love to go back, and you know, when you do live TV without a script, you say things and it's a heat of the moment debate. And are you always going to use the most concise and perfect word or sentence? Not always. Just to tell you what I was trying to say, in my opinion, and I said this and I'll reiterate it, there are two lenses or lanes that college football players currently are in. There is a lane that you leave high school football, your only goal is 3 years, and I'm going to the NFL. And that's, again, that's your prerogative, by the way. If that's the lane you choose to be in, whether you're at Ohio State, Texas, Florida State, USC, you don't really care. You're there for a pit stop. It's a transaction. Bounce, 3 years, I'm gone. Okay. Some coaches sometimes get on that same path. You know, we saw the coaching carousel, whether it's head coaches bouncing around, assistant coaches bouncing around. So it's just kind of the world. And for certain people, they're just ready to move. Right. And for a player that does that, I don't think that they're really interested in getting to know the university or spending time there beyond just 3 years and out. And again, I don't recommend that view, but if that's how you're looking at college football, then that's your prerogative. There are other kids who look at it, have the same goals, going to the NFL. But while they're there, they kind of plant some roots. They make some relationships. They're humble about their experience. They're meeting people. They realize, hey, man, I don't want to put all my eggs into one basket in the NFL. I want to go to the NFL, and I'm going to the NFL. But when I'm done playing, I want either it's my education, my relationships that I've made here. I'm going to have a community to fall back on that's going to help me when I'm 30. If I'm lucky enough to play for 8 years, I'm only 30 when I get done. I want to have something to do. Like Christian Wilkins from Clemson is a perfect example. Him and that whole defensive line.
Right.
They graduated from Clemson. They're on to the NFL. They'll probably play for 10 years or maybe longer. But I promise you, when they get done, they're going to be more successful off the field than they will be on the field because of the relationships that they built at Clemson. And my fear, and what I was trying to say, is I think the new system with Portal and NIL, we're almost setting these players, we're leading these players down a path. Will it work out for some going to the NFL? Sure. And will they make generational wealth? A handful will. But what about the ones that go to the NFL for 3 years or 5 years? What about the ones that don't make it to the NFL? What do they have to fall back on? And I'm not saying that if they choose not to participate in school and in the education and in the relationship part of it, if they choose not to, that again, that's up to them. I'm just saying, as adults, we're not helping them. You know, it's like if I'm in a house with my four sons, mm-hmm. they get to be about 16 and they just are like, Dad, I'm going to go sleep and just hide over here in the corner. Okay, you guys do what you want to do. Your kids, you're entitled to have your own opinion, your own thoughts. That's up to you. Do whatever you want to do. You know, here's my credit card. Go max that thing out. Do whatever you want. I don't think as adults we should do that. I think we should try to help them. And I feel like our system right now is not helping the players. The part about not loving the game the way people used to love it. If I grew up in this generation, I probably could fall in that same category. When I was a kid, obviously, we didn't have a lot of distractions. We didn't have things to watch or video games or especially Instagram and all this social media that occupies so much of your time. Right. Again, watching my kids and their friends. We were out playing football or pick up basketball or whatever. Or when a big game came on, we were watching it on TV. It's amazing. How many kids watch football? Like, forget playing. How many is a teenage boys, other than their team, how many kids are a Arizona State fan? Mm-hmm. And when Michigan and Michigan State comes on at 3:30, oh my gosh, the Michigan State game's on. It's not happening at all. And so when you were a kid, or I were a kid, forget playing, we were just passionate fans of the game. And so that's a completely different set of circumstances and an argument when you look at not all kids, but a lot of kids are much more interested in their social media sites than ask any TV executive. They're concerned about the future. It's people watching these games, you know, and keeping people interested in these games as each generation gets older and older. And so I don't think I was saying anything groundbreaking. The kids don't love the sport the way they used to, but tying it into opt-outs, I think, is what happened there.
Yeah.
People, you know, people looking at it, you're saying, well, they're opting out. They don't love the game the way they used to. What I was trying to say there is it would be great to understand how players that are fortunate to look at themselves as a potential first rounder and they're weighing that option. Do I play with my boys one last time, or do I forego, you know, this last bowl game and not get hurt, and just the money is going to be more important than that last experience? Again, I can't understand that. My point was, where do we draw a line on meaningless? Like, why is that bowl game? If you're in that first lane of I'm going to the NFL, why is that bowl game meaningless? Why
the
is
Rose Bowl?
Why isn't the game before that meaningless? Like, why isn't the whole season, if your only goal is to get to the NFL, like, why is Will Anderson, if he chooses to be in that lane, why would he even play next year? Now, forget him skipping his bowl game. Why wouldn't he's if that's his focus, and I'm using him as example. I'm not saying this is what he's doing. I'm just using him as an example. He's already established himself as, well, I don't know, top five pick.
Easily.
If he's looking at it through, I'm going to the league, and that's why I'm here, then I think our future is going to be not skipping bowl games. I think it's going to be the agents are going to talk to these guys and their parents. Hey, listen, you're already a top five pick. Forget skipping the bowl game. Let's just sit out that whole year, protect yourself. We'll get you set up with a guy out in Phoenix or Miami, and we'll start working out, getting you ready. And there will be players. That's where we're heading. There will be players that are like, you know what? You're right. I'm going to sit out the whole year. Again, that's their prerogative. I'm not suggesting that it's not. Do whatever you want with your life and your son and your, you know, your situation. But I'm saying, I don't know if I would recommend that, mm-hmm. because there's more to life than just playing in the NFL. There's more to life than chasing that generational wealth that'll happen for a handful of guys that play college football. There's going to be something after you play football. And I care about the game, and I really care about the players. And I hate to see them led down a path where they're chasing short-term money with name, image, likeness, and they're not investing in, and what you can't see is long-term relationships that can ultimately change your life. No one talks about players that go play in the NFL after 3 years and they didn't invest in their relationships in school and they have nowhere to go. They have no one that's there. They don't have a degree. They have no one there to help them. Now they'll turn around, they'll blame the system. But to me, I'm a great example. I never went to one NFL camp, never played in the NFL, would have loved to. It was a big dream of mine. Didn't happen for me. So what am I going to do? I didn't have any money. If I didn't get a scholarship, I would have gone to the military. I didn't have any money. So I graduated. And then I thought I was just falling to the business world. I didn't really have any dreams other than football. I didn't know what to do. And I stumbled into local radio because I love to talk sports. But it wasn't a goal of mine to work at ESPN. It wasn't a goal of mine. Like, I'm going to be on game day one day. I just stumbled into a passion, which was sports. Worked out for me because I really worked relationships and I met people and I talked to people and I was humble and I was polite. And I tried to treat people well. And when I got done, there were people there that wanted to try to help me out. So I'm a living example of what I'm talking about. And that's why I think I'm so passionate about, hey, shoot for the NFL, man. Go get it. But while you're doing that, make relationships with people. Be courteous. Be the superstar on Saturday, but be the most low-key, low maintenance guy off the field. And what, wait till you see how much that school and their alumni are going to want to help you. And I just feel like sometimes, not all opt-outs, but sometimes guys just don't put value in that. And definitely social media and people who are influencing them, they definitely don't put value in relationships, education, graduating, and what it can do for you long term. But I'll never, ever, it's my opinion. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. I'm entitled to my opinion, having lived it, having raised four sons, having two that play Power Five football. I'm entitled to my opinion as well. And I think education, I think relationships are important. If you're the first pick in the draft, I still think that stuff's important, because I've seen examples of guys that have done that and made it to the first pick overall, lasted for 5 or 7 or 8 years and didn't have anywhere to go or anything to do on the back end. I've seen guys that worked the system while they were there, still were the first overall pick. And when they got done playing, they crushed it even more when they got done playing. So I just love to see these guys have more options than just the NFL and trying to chase that generational wealth that happens to less than 1%. So what happens to the other 99% of these guys? We want to help. This system needs to help those 99%ers have a place to kind of fall back on. And I get passionate about it because I care about, like I said, college football, and I care about players.
There's a lot there to unpack. The first is the spotlight now shines on the small percentage, because those are the difference makers in the sport. You don't need to be Mel Kiper, Todd McShay to know that Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, Kenny Pickett, Kenneth Walker, some of these guys are going to be first round picks, and that's what they set their sights on. But to your point, the other 99.5% of the players don't get that, don't have that. They are going to have to find life after football. Most of them today, most of them probably graduated in the winter. They just played their last game as a senior in college football. Now they're in the now what scenario, because they've had to structure around them forever. We live now in a player empowerment world in college football. So do you, I watched it. I watched game day. I work at ESPN. I work in college football. There's no doubt that the comment was lumped in with Olave and Wilson opting out of the Rose Bowl. It wasn't a national championship. It wasn't a college football playoff. Looking back now, with how it was characterized publicly, do you stand by the overall arching comment of, there just isn't overall, not those two specific players, because I think that was characterized the way that it was. I mean, are you standing by how you, what you said in the overall, hey, there's more emphasis on the NFL than there is now with just going out there and playing the sport?
Yeah, I don't necessarily think I stand by anything. I think it's just clarifying.
Yeah.
I did initially. In that 8 minute conversation that we had, there was a lot of couching of comments, but nobody heard that. You know, I think a lot of people just kind of wanted to hear what they wanted to hear. So I think the amount of money that's now in the system is so different from when I played, and I get it. And if we need to make players a union and make them employees, then that would be great. I never thought I would ever say that. But I think we've reached a point where that would be great. You know, if you're late for a meeting, you're fine. You know, you want to get cryo, that costs you money. You want to get, you know, massage, that costs you money.
I mean, because right now it doesn't. Right now it's carte blanche for these guys.
No, you can do whatever you want to do. No matter what you think, having the players have all the power is not good. It's not good. I mean, I don't know anybody that could ever think that that's a good thing. It's not. Do we need to kind of restructure, recalibrate the system? 1,000%. With the amount of money that continues to go up in this sport, without a doubt, I'm not saying players don't deserve opportunities and chances. For sure they do. So I'm not like the players get what they get and they'll like it kind of guy, but I am thinking the greatness of college football is what you learn from the game long-term. Like, it's not just about chasing short-term money. That's not what makes this game great. What makes this game great is how you do some things that you don't want to do. And it teaches you, wow, that really sucked to go through that. I can't believe my coach made me do that. But now that I'm 30, I look back at it, and I hated that guy, I thought. But guess what? He taught me so much about life. And that's being taken away. The coaches are being marginalized, and that's not good. You know, you can say whatever you want. Well, these coaches bounce around. They can do whatever they want to do.
Right.
You know, they make money. And I'm not saying that's right either. You know, if Brian Kelly decides to go to Notre Dame or leave Notre Dame and go to LSU, he should fulfill his commitment and then say, guys, I'm off to LSU. I don't agree with coaches just bouncing around and doing whatever they want to do. So I don't think that's great, but I'm saying the overwhelming majority of these coaches love their players and are tough on them and are teaching them life lessons that aren't always pretty. But to take that away and just make it, oh yeah, whatever you want, you're a player, you've got rights, this is an empowerment movement, you do your thing. That's not real. That's not good. And we have got, I don't know who the problem is. We don't have one czar.
Don't have a leader.
We don't have Mark Emmert's doesn't have the power. His knees were taken out when he went to Congress and went to Washington, D.C. and talked with them. I think it was Judge Kavanaugh told him, you know, here's our ruling. And by the way, this is what we think of your system.
Right.
Since then, he's pretty much gone like this. I'm done. And so now you have different leaders in different regions. You know, you have all these conference commissioners individually leading and states. You have 50 states that are leading with their own rules for NIL. But we don't have one rule. Here are the rules for NIL. And here's what we're going to do for players. We don't have that. So it's just a train that's like off the tracks and out of control. And what we've seen recently, Caleb Williams, transfer from Oklahoma now, he basically just came out and said, I'm going to go where it's the right fit. I'm going to the highest bidder. Like, how can you watch college football and think, yeah, we're on a good path here. This is what we're looking to do. Dylan Gabriel leaves UCF, transfers to UCLA. I don't know, 2 weeks, maybe 2 weeks later, says Caleb Williams is leaving. My old offensive coordinator from UCF went to Ole Miss. Now he's at Oklahoma, Jeff Levy. Hey, Chip, I got to go to Norman and go play for Jeff Levy. Hey, I know you told all these other quarterbacks you had a guy, but you're going to have to reevaluate that. I'm out of here. Hey, great. Player empowerment. He can do what he wants to do. That's not right.
You know, and I'm glad you brought that up, because here's what I get. The blowback that I get when I get on one of my this isn't good is, well, the coaches get to leave. Why can't the players leave? Well, it's first of all, two things. One, the coaches, I don't agree with how they handle it most of the time, but we have other people to thank because of the early signing day period, which has launched a whole new era and the coaching carousel, because we wanted an early signing day. We screamed about that. Okay, we get it. But now, because of that, on December 15th, schools need their coach in place to get in and salvage a recruiting class. That's part one. Part two, the coaches are adults, 50 plus, 45 plus year old men who coach. They are professionals. This notion that it's okay to, well, because the adults are doing it, let's have an 18, 19-year-old kid, he's allowed to do it. The fact that we have gotten to this stage where we're allowing teenagers who are playing college football to make it all about them, not the team, not the Bo Schembechler, the team.
That's where the game's broken.
We've allowed 18 and 19 year olds to say, hey, go get yours during recruiting. Like, make it all about you during recruiting.
Yeah. That's where it's pretty, if that happens, where it becomes the individual and they're hearing from people that are in their corner, hey, the system doesn't care about you. This coach doesn't care about you. And whether those things are true or not, it really, first of all, I think, like I said earlier, walking in this world, probably closer than anybody, I get behind the curtain at every school, and I have for 26 years. I watch coaches interact with players. I would say 95% of these coaches genuinely live for their players and want what's best for their players. And that's their focus, their primary focus. Just because you see some high profile coaches leave doesn't take away from these coaches and what they can mean to these players in their lives. But these people that are putting into their ear, hey, don't worry, those coaches don't care. Hey, the system doesn't care. You got to go get yours. You don't owe these people anything. Like, the people that say that are undermining the actual player themselves, because the beauty of college football is, as you just said, it's a team sport, and you learn so many valuable kind of guiding principles for the rest of your life by playing the game of football. Not everybody does everything perfectly in football. Not everybody's a superstar every practice and every game. There are moments the sport humbles you, which is great. There are moments you need your teammates because you're just not having a great day and they pick you up. There are moments you become the star and they help elevate you, and you feel, there's just a camaraderie and the love of team and the life lessons that you learn. That's what makes this sport great. And that's where I get the most fired up and the most concerned, is when I see people say things like, they don't care about you. This sport doesn't care about you. This system doesn't care about you. And these players, unfortunately, they listen to that. And I think it ultimately can impact them. And I hate to see that, because like I said earlier, I've seen so many guys that have those dreams, but they keep things in perspective about, hey, I'm a part of a team. Now, the whole opt-out thing, it's wait till you see next year's bowl games. You know, it's only going to get more and more and more. And I'm not saying, how dare you? I'm just saying there's something about accountability. There's something about responsibility and something about finishing with your boys that has a lasting impact. If you want to skip out, then go for it. It's your deal. I'm just trying to tell you, from watching this for so long, I've seen so many guys play this sport, and I've seen the camaraderie that's there to embrace them when they're done playing in the NFL, or they bust in the NFL, and they always have that place of camaraderie and love to come back to. And I'm not saying that if you miss a bowl game that brotherhood still wouldn't be there for you. I'm just saying that there's something about finishing that a lot of communities and alums have an appreciation for. And it's something to take into consideration. But I do think we are going, let's not deny, we're heading towards, guys are going to start skipping playoff games. Guys are going to start skipping national championships. And again, if that's what they want to do, then they should do it. Guys are going to skip entire seasons. I think agents are going to be able to talk these guys into going, hey, listen, you're already a first pick in the draft. There's no sense. Forget their rules. There's no sense in you playing. Let's protect you. And guys are going to listen to that. And again, if that's what they want to do, not good. It's just not something I would recommend.
So here's what we have when we break this down, because you know, in that example, you've got Ja'Marr Chase, who used COVID-19 and said, hey, I'm going to opt out of this season. Yeah. I just won a national championship in 2019. I'm going to opt out. I'm not going to play. Well, there's example one for players to be like, see, he did it. And look at him. He's going to win Rookie of the Year. And he's having a phenomenal season.
Micah Parsons.
There's that example.
At Penn State. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Both of them. So now you've got an example for the players to cite with saying, hey, it works. Then for the opt-out crowd, Matt Corral gets hurt in the Sugar Bowl. And everyone's like, see, this is why you do it. Mm-hmm. I get it. Injuries are a part of football when you suit up. It's just, it's inherent to the game. I just don't know why we can't be fair about this. And it's got to be so loud when there's an opposition to a thought or an opinion. I just don't understand that, because you know what? Kenny Pickett is going to be a first round draft pick. Good for him. He came back. He was a 6th round pick a year ago. He's elevated his stock. But what about those guys that woke up at 5, 6 a.m. for the winter workouts that aren't going to go to the NFL, that Peach Bowl was their last opportunity to play college football, because they don't get what Pickett's getting in the NFL? You know, they fall short in the game they probably should have won. Think about that for a minute. They're guys that did the same workouts Pickett did everything the same, but they're not going to the NFL. This was it for them. And if their quarterback plays, they may win.
Right, right. I would just say this, though. If you have any hesitation, I remember Ron Dayne came back for, it was either his junior or senior year, and he was kind of tiptoeing through, was not running like Ron Dayne. And people watching, they probably don't even know who Ron Dayne is. He was a running back going way back. This is how long I've been doing this, watching guys make these decisions. He was tiptoeing through holes, and he was just like, he was running not to get hurt. And my recommendation is, if you have any reservation, or if you're in that lane of I'm going to the NFL, that's my goal. My goal is now a reality. That's I'm checking out. If that's your world, I would recommend to you, don't play. I would definitely say to you, if you have any reservation or you have any concern, if that's where your brain is, do yourself and do your team, especially a favor, and definitely sit out. I would say that to a guy if he were looking at his junior year and he's a first, he already knows he's a top five pick. I would encourage, if he came to me, what do you think I should do? And I'm like, where's your mind? Like, how do you feel? Are you, I know you're torn, but like, where are you really? And if he said, man, I want to play with my boys so bad, but I'm so worried. I've come so far. What if I get hurt? Like, if that's just in your brain at all,
right?
You got to go. You've got to do yourself. And even if you have another year of eligibility, pull that Micah Parsons. That's our future, right? That's where we're headed. I don't have to like it, but I'm thinking that's where we're going. But if I just don't like to see guys play if they're worried about getting hurt. You've watched guys play when they're worried about getting hurt. They're tiptoeing through. A lot of times you get hurt when you worry about getting hurt. So I would say anybody who's concerned about getting hurt at any point, you need to not play. But I would hope, I said earlier, I would hope people don't let that creep into their mind. You've been playing football your whole life, haven't been hurt. Maybe you turned an ankle, maybe you had this, but you're good. The harder you play, more physical you are, you know, the better chance of you not getting hurt. But, if there's a guy that's sitting there debating that, that's what I would tell him. Honestly, as much as I don't like it, that's what I would tell him.
Yeah. And people yell and scream, oh, it's ESPN's fault. It's the college football playoffs fault. You guys did this to yourself.
I didn't see that. What's that? I don't know.
That ESPN has put such a priority on the playoff. And that's all we talk about. Playoff.
I argue
self-induced the bowl games. Meaning,
well, I would argue that there's some validity to that. As a company, as a whole, I think there's some validity to that. I've made a point on the shows that I've worked on, and I think you have as well. We've talked about this off the air. Our biggest concern, I think, because none of us knew what we were getting into in 14 when we went to the playoff, we were all excited. Right. It's going to make college football even better. Can you imagine 4 teams? And what happened was, whoever said that or whoever has that narrative, I was having the same narrative after like 5 years of it. Like, damn, like all anybody talks about, who's in,
right?
Like, what about the Peach Bowl with Michigan State and Pitt? What a magical run those two teams had. What about what Wake Forest is doing? Like, I made it a priority coming out of last year, heading into this year, talking to a lot of our executives. Hey, we got to do a much better job of talking about the totality of the sport and not just focusing on, there's 4 teams
and there's 130.
there's so much that goes on that's good outside of those four teams that as the rights holders, we're making the Peach Bowl or the Cotton Bowl or the Fiesta Bowl or the Rose Bowl or the Orange Bowl, whatever it is. We're making that kind of like second class citizens. And those are the behemoths of the bowls. We are making those games feel like they're second class citizens to the four, you know, the rotation of wherever it is. It's, you know, it rotates around with two bowls for the semifinal every year. And so I'd like to think we did a much better job on that in game day, on your guys' show, on this podcast, in different areas of trying to realize, hey, we're going to celebrate all these teams, you know, teams that are just trying to chase a conference championship. They have no shot at a playoff, but man, what a year Wake Forest is having. What a job Mel Tucker's on. How about the Baylor Bears? Like, I feel like we've been bragging all year. So I think in 2021, we've done a much better job. I would say people like you and I and certain shows we work on, but I don't know, like as an entire company, I still think as an entire company, there's still kind of that focus on the four. And so I'm not saying I'm happy to agree with that, but I do think there's some truth to that.
And by the way, we dropped the who's in promo. Who's in's gone. Like we don't do that anymore. It's tough. I don't want to lose the foundation of the sport that we love. I you know, if this was today's era back in 96, when ASU went to the Rose Bowl against Ohio State, I couldn't fathom Jake or anyone being like, you know what? I want to play in the NFL. This is an all-time season for Arizona State. Sorry, guys. Yeah. I can't fathom that. And look, I get it. I'm 43 years old. I'm fine. Well, I'm out of touch. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't make it wrong for me or anyone else to think, is there a way that we can perfect this new era that we're going down? It's too late. It's too late. I mean, the transfer portal, the NIL, the opt-outs, we're there. We're not going back. Is there a way to perfect it to protect what we've enjoyed for so long?
No. And by the way, I don't think those are selfish reasons being just a fan of your team, Arizona State. I think it's what I've learned. I'm older than you, is there's more to life. You know, I made a little bit of money. I didn't come from money. Money doesn't mean anything to me. I feel like as I get older, life is about moments. Life is about memories. Life is about relationships. That's really all it comes down to. If I lost all my money today, I'd have all those memories, all those moments. I'd have all my relationships, and I'd move into an apartment and I'd go on with my life. I feel like money has changed everything. The amount of money that's in the system, the amount of money coaches are making, you know, the players and their friends and relatives, they see that and they're saying, wait a second, where is it? What's in it for us? Players never really had that. I mean, they never really had that approach. They were just like, I'm going to the NFL, but meanwhile, I'm having fun playing college football with my boys. Like that was always for 100 years. That's kind of been, so I don't think you're out of touch as a 40-year-old or a 50-year-old. I think we've all enjoyed what the sport's done for us as fans. We've all enjoyed the sport, what it's done is for the players and the opportunities that it provides you and the moments that going back to Jackson Smith and Jigba and CJ Stroud, no matter what they accomplish in their lives, if they make $200 million, they're going to go back to January 1st, 2022, when someone asked them, What was one of the most special days of your life? What was a memory as a football player that really sticks out? No matter what they do, I've talked to thousands of NFL players that have played in Super Bowls. Inevitably, they'll go back to a moment of a college experience because of the passion, because of the energy, because of just the competitive juice that was on that field. They never forget it. And it's like, you hate to take away those moments away from these guys, because they're listening to, man, I gotta go get paid. I gotta get what's mine. And while I don't disagree with recalibrating and making sure the players need to be able to, you know, NIL opportunities, I think even beyond that, let's try to restructure things and get them even more than just NIL opportunities. If the system is going to continue to be able to pay coaches $10 million, then I think there's a way to continue to find ways to get players more. So I'm all for that, but not at the point where we have to take away these moments in their lives. And so you're not wrong in remembering 96. It's your opinion, by the way. Do whatever you want with it. It's my opinion that I love college football as much as any human alive right now. Any human alive. I love this sport. I like the NFL. I live for college football. I live for those Saturdays. It's not because I live for this player's about to get paid. This player, he just caught three touchdowns. He's going to get, that's not what makes me love college football. That's the NFL. What I love about college football is the camaraderie, the togetherness of the community, that team, the marching band, the cheerleaders, the home crowd, the traditions of the game. All those things make this sport great. And I feel like all that stuff I just described is being put on the back burner and it doesn't really matter. And I think now it's all about a transaction of, hey, I need to get what I need to get. And I'm not saying there's kind of a trend where some of the players are, that's their focus. And you hate to see it because they need this good kind of secret sauce that makes this sport great. They need some of that, you know, to use for the rest of their life.
This has been a fun conversation. Look, at the end of the day, you're right. It's our opinion. It's your opinion. Thank you for coming out and kind of just describe, because again, we know this world, they're going to find the headline, they're going to find the clickbait, and they're going to go with it. But big picture.
Yeah, and I would say one thing, Matt, like going through that, in 26 years of doing this, I'm not a shock jock guy. You know, I watch Get Up and First Take and some of these shows, and those guys have big, bold opinions every day.
Right.
I just, in 26 years, never really chosen that. Again, everybody's entitled to their own way of doing things. I've always been trying to be more reasonable, try to be a little bit more level-headed, more just, here's my thoughts, always. I've never really been on that side of like where people get upset because of what you said. I think I can count maybe two or three times that's ever happened. And so I don't like it, you know, and what I learned is it's incredible how people don't take into account who your brand has been for 26 years of just being a guy that's, here's are my thoughts. And then they cherry pick on an 8-minute segment. They cherry pick players don't love football, or they cherry pick whatever it is that they needed to put on their own platform and then further their narrative or further their agenda. And it's like, what can you do? Like they're going to do whatever they want to do. And you're going to sit there and just take it. And it's just, I'm more than happy to do that for the love of college football. I'll stand right on the front lines and I will take every single thing you throw at me. Nothing you can do to get me to back down from college football. So there's that. And then there's, it can happen to you, can happen to anybody out there. They can take a little this or a little that and do whatever they want with it. And then random people who didn't see that 8-minute segment, random people who just maybe scroll through and they see a headline. Wow, I can't believe Herb Street said that. And it's like, they have a couple of people that says some of these things, because I just stayed away from it. But a couple of people I really respect wrote an article, and I said, did you watch, just curious before you wrote your article, did you watch the entire 8-minute segment to hear everything that was said? No. I didn't. I just saw, you know, a couple of quotes and thought you were really off base with, you know, what you said. And I was like, you wrote an entire article without being responsible enough to listen to the entire 8 minutes and hear how Reese one time came back to me. Wait a second. That's a sweeping comment. Are you saying every? No, no, I'm not saying all. I'm saying some players, blah, 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 you know, don't have the same passion for the game the way they used to. You know, that's from, again, 26 years of doing this, four sons, 21 or younger, two in Power Five football. It's a reality. It's just they're into Instagram. It's not. And by the way, if I were born right now, I'd probably be right there with them.
Oh, Kirk, now you're showing your age. It's TikTok. Come on. It's TikTok.
Or whatever, you know, whatever, Instagram, TikTok, whatever it is. I'll just call it social media.
There you go.
Like they're into that, man. They're right into their phones. That's what their passion is today, kids. And again, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm saying that's what it is. That's anybody that doesn't think that is they haven't been around kids because that is where their hearts are. So anyway, I just was shocked with how people just know. Did you watch the 8 minutes? No, but I saw your quote. Oh, that's cool. Oh, okay. That makes a lot of sense. So whatever they got to do, man, I'm not going away. I'll be right on the front lines for the sport.
Good, because the sport needs you there. And I look forward to catching up with you in Indy at the national championship. You're doing a very Herbie-like thing. You're gonna call an NFL game. Then you're going to red-eye Jedi to Indianapolis. We're going to talk a little Alabama, Georgia. It's going to be a hell of a weekend. Can't wait.
Yeah, going to be fun. Looking forward to seeing Pat Mahomes and the Broncos out in Denver and then flying, like you said, over to Indy and getting ready. Here we go, round two. We saw what happened in Atlanta with Nick Saban and an underdog role. I don't think anybody's going to put them in that underdog role to the level which they were the first matchup. But some of these Georgia Alabama games, last few times Kirby and Nick have gone head to head, they've been last second kind of feels, typically, with the exception of the game last matchup where things got out of control there in favor of Bama. But I'd expect a heck of a game for the national championship. And by the way, I've heard also ESPN, the SEC, and it's like, what do you want? Like, if we were going to pick the game, if we were going to like call in the bookies and set up a fix, it'd be Ohio State and Alabama, or it would be a Michigan, Georgia national champion, or a Notre Dame, Alabama national championship every year. That would be our dream. If you're saying blame ESPN, the only thing, what are we going to start doing? We don't control the games. Maybe we'll start spotting other schools 14 points before they play Alabama and Georgia. And you want us to do, maybe we can talk to the NCAA about that. I don't know what you want ESPN to do. The product on the field decides the outcome. You can make this a 12-team playoff. You can make it a 36-team playoff. End of the day, Alabama and Georgia are still going to have defensive linemen that come from a different country or, you know, like a different planet. These guys are big, strong, athletic guys that beat people at the line of scrimmage, and no one else has them.
I say it all the time. You want this to stop? Go recruit those players. Go get those players and then go beat them when you play them.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, catch them. Clemson did. Clemson caught them. Maybe we had Clemson fatigue. Well, they caught them. If you don't like it, catch them. Yeah. Go get the player. Go coach them up. When you play Alabama in one of their 12 games, beat them. Or if you get them in the playoff, beat them. If Cincinnati, if you don't like it, then Cincinnati beat them. Mm. Michigan, if you don't like it, don't do what you did in that game. Beat them. And that's my biggest, like, we could go on a different tangent. Quit blaming everybody but yourself. That's it. We blame now. Just go fix it and everything will be fine. All right. Yeah. I'm going to slip on my soapbox. Love it. This is good. I feel like I get a little lighter in the chest going into work. Good stuff, Kirk. I look forward to catching up with you in Indianapolis. And hey, I think that we've got the two best teams in the country. We're going to see that come to fruition on Monday night, January 10th on ESPN. For Kirk Herbstreit, I'm Matt Barry. Really appreciate everyone listening to the ESPN College Football Podcast. You're entitled to your opinion. You could throw your phone at the car, whatever the case might be. But again, if your opinion's different than Kirk's, if your opinion's different than mine, that's the beauty of the sport. It always has been. There's dissenting opinions, which makes this sport so passionate. Herbie, appreciate you, Bob. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, see you, man.